I want to welcome to the show this morning First Selectman Rudy Marconi of the town of Ridgefield. Good morning, Rudy. Thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Good morning to you as well.
So I know as soon as this situation unfolded last week and it became news at the beginning of this week, I had called your office. You and I had a little bit of a discussion, and it sounds like you're very upset about what happened to this town employee.
Yes, she's a 30-year employee, impeccable record, has come to work every single day, done her job with A grades. And for this to happen to her is a shame after 30 years. It's just, it's sad.
It, you know what? It is really sad. Because it sounds like she has, like you said, a clean record. She's somebody who just wanted to do her job. And I know plenty of people, myself included, who don't really enjoy being on camera. It sounds bizarre because of the work that I do, but I do not enjoy when people are like, let's all get into a group. I'm always the one who's like, oh, let me take the picture. I don't enjoy being ambushed. I don't enjoy being in front of a camera. So it seemed like this was the case for this woman. Could you tell me if a situation like this has happened before in Ridgefield's town hall?
No, never. Not in my tenure. I've been first selectman for 23 years, and we've never had an incident like this before. You know, a lot of people are shy, camera shy. We all know that. My spouse is. She has been for years. She does not like having her picture taken. So I understand where the employee is coming from. But to take it one step above and to video, which is just a consistent, constant holding of a camera in front of someone. And in this case, not only one, but two cameras. And intimidating, knowing that this person has already said, please, I do not like being recorded. Stop video recording me. Right?
Mm-hmm. That's she right said it three times. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how else to say it. And there was laughter, the continued harassment, provocation, intimidation, something about National Grinch Day, which they never even knew about it until they came into this building. I happened to hear the call yesterday. The individual was told that by our registrar of voters, Wayne Flogel, who said, was asked the question when he was video, what's going on? And he's, oh, it's National Grinch Day. Is that what you're here for?
Yeah, what is that? I had Josh on the show yesterday, and Josh said, oh, I was in, and here's the thing, and I'm not calling people liars, but it's like, that's what this show is about. It's open forum, and we're able to hear everybody's side of the story. But I said, why did you go there? What led you to go to Ridgefield? Like, quiet Ridgefield, why did you go there? And he said, well, I got a tip from somebody in the town to go check out something about a Grinch Day going down. I said, what does that mean, though? He said, I still don't know. I said, but what does that mean? Like, as a reporter, if I got a call saying, hey, Melissa, you should go check this out, there's some kind of a Grinch Day going on, the first thing I would say is, okay, what does that mean? What is a Grinch Day? Like, what is that? I'm not familiar. I'm not from Ridgefield. Is that a Ridgefield thing?
Well, you do know who the Grinch is. You've seen that on TV.
I do,
Dr.
Sure.
Seuss, et cetera, correct?
Yes.
In Ridgefield, a men's club has started a Grinch, and several years ago, unexpectedly, we had an individual dress up as a Grinch and actually distributed presents to kids in need.
Wait, so not to put humor into this, so you mean to say that it's almost a play on the fact that the Grinch is typically like a bad character. The Grinch does something nice. And in the video, the creators are calling this woman the Grinch, who would have actually been the good guy in Ridgefield on Grinch Day. That's funny. Wow.
But they weren't aware of it.
No, they weren't.
Until they got to the second floor and confronted another employee who told them about it. He may have gotten a tip to come to Ridgefield from someone somewhere. Who cares? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the video, everyone, the entire town, town hall, police department, everyone treated him with respect and dignity. And they didn't have this incident until the last person. She was the last person that they videoed and got the reaction. And that has become the focal point. So to me, everything is about this one individual employee when, in fact, they did interview everyone else.
Right,
and if their intention is not to call out and profiteer off of that response, then I think they're telling a lie.
So I don't think you're the only one who thinks this. This is the first electman we're talking to of the town of Ridgefield, Rudy Marconi. We had on the show this week Josh Abrams, who is the creator, that YouTube content creator who filmed that. And has been working, he said, for 3 years with this channel. And he says it's to show people their rights. And the one thing I asked him was, okay, so in this video, what was the end goal? What did you prove? You proved a woman who doesn't feel comfortable being filmed and that when you get under people's skin, bad things can happen. I'm not condoning hitting, but I just don't understand what was proven. So what I'm hearing from you, Rudy Marconi, is that you think this was just for pure profit, which is what many people think.
Yes. Now, I am not the HR department myself are not condoning the hitting, as you said. Not at all. And the individual was put on immediate administrative leave, which means don't come to work, but you will get paid until there is resolution. Until the investigation has been completed. An investigation has been underway with interviews, discussions, et cetera. And that decision will be made probably the latter part of today.
So hold on for 1 second, Rudy, because when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about protocols. It's my understanding that these kinds of acts are going on, not just in Connecticut, but across the country. These audits, essentially, these free amendment, these First Amendment audits. So what can we do to better prep our staff for people like Accountability for All's creators? So hold on. We're going to come back to that. Right. The town of Ridgefield has kind of been in the spotlight lately because of a viral video that shows a town employee who is getting very upset because she doesn't know who's filming her and she's just doing her work. And she gets up and she does, in fact, pick up a file and hit the videographer with that file. There are now pending legal issues happening. This woman has been suspended, at least for now. Really quickly, if you don't mind, Rudy, before we talk about protocols, we're talking to the first electman, of course, of Ridgefield. What has been kind of the aftermath? I don't want to obviously expose this woman more than she already has. I feel awful for the situation. But I'm curious, like, has there been a trickle effect because of this video? Has her family or has she been now, you know, has she gone through anything since this happened?
Yeah, probably Melissa demonstrates the worst side of social media with YouTube and Google. The most negative results that you could ask for relative to a family. She has had, I have had, the town has had comments from all over the country calling for her to be fired immediately. The vulgar language being used in emails is astounding. The group that is responding, at least for that first 5 to 7, what's it been now? 7 days almost. They've been horrible, horrific. The people have posted their address. They've posted names. Her kids get text messages. For the first several days, it was very, very rough. And we did everything we could from an employee assistance perspective in terms of insurances, et cetera, than the agreements that we have with the unions. It's tough. I mean, put yourself in that position. Was the fact that she hit an individual right? No. And I'll continue to say that and agree that it was wrong. But the purpose, it appears anyway, the purpose of that whole ordeal was to create that situation for the purpose of making a profit. And if you do a little research, you will find that the amount of money you are paid by YouTube, or in essence, Google, who owns YouTube, you are paid based on the number of clicks you get to that channel,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it can be substantial. When you get up into the hundreds of thousands of clicks, YouTube pays a generous amount. And there are websites that calculate that for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a pretty good idea what they're making on this. I don't feel at liberty to put that number out there because it's a ballpark and I don't want to create any kind of misinformation. But
that's okay, Rudy. I got the website and I did ask Josh if he could tell me how much.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he said you can look it up yourself. So I have no problem doing that. I will do my job and look it up. And then I will definitely be letting people know how much he profited off of that video. So not to worry. I've got you covered.
And that becomes obviously the reason for this whole charade
mm-hmm.
is the First Amendment. And people who are calling themselves First Amendment auditors. We don't have First Amendment auditors in this country. It is a self-proclaimed title, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And to mislead the general public into thinking that you are the knight protecting the people of this country's First Amendment is another lie. It's misleading and it's wrong. And for a town, a state, a federal government to allow this type of behavior, to actually use the First Amendment to profiteer, to make money, should be a crime in and of itself.
So here's my question for you, Rudy, because I know we're running out of time. But unfortunately, as you mentioned, this is a trend and people are doing mm-hmm. it. What do you think needs to happen then? What protocol should be in place for workers, especially if they work for towns or cities where it is legal for people to walk in and do this?
Right.
I feel like this woman should have, I think the whole office, I think every town and city should learn from this situation, not using her as an example, but what protocols then should be in place? Like, should she have gotten up and said, you know what, you're not answering my questions, I'm going to go talk to a manager?
Yes.
Like, because she had rights as well if she didn't feel comfortable. So what should they be doing?
Well, first of all, implement some training. And there are people out there who can train your employees for this situation. Never raise yourself to their level of emotions or agitation or what their goals are. Maintain your calm, ask, bring them to your supervisor. Do not try and de-escalate that situation yourself, but don't also be sure to remain calm and don't react to the situation. It's a very, today's society is very tense,
mm-hmm.
is the word I will use. We have had people screaming, yelling obscenities, claiming that's their First Amendment right in front of town hall, yelling the F word up at town hall. And the police have been told that that's their First Amendment right. To use vulgarities in public in front of children is a right of an individual. To me, we've gone too far. The pendulum has gone too far the other way. And we need to bring it back. There may be 30-40% of the people in this country who you're never, ever going to convince that government truly is trying to do what's best for the people. I'm a believer in that. That's why I'm doing the job I'm doing. I care about people. But there's 30-40% of this country that thinks I'm evil, that I'm sinister, that there's some other motive behind it, and that we're controlling their lives. And you're never, ever, ever going to be able to convince those people otherwise. But the good news is that there's 60 to 70% of people who are good and want to bring things back to where they were, where people respected one another, where people didn't have social media to blatantly call people other names, to hurt other people. That is not what social media was supposed to be about, and we lost it. The controls aren't there either. And companies are making billions of dollars off the people who have been led to think that they can get away with that, that they can do that, that they're protected by the First Amendment. I think we need to take a step back and review as a society where we're at and take control back, if you will. I don't like that word, but it's appropriate in this discussion because we have lost control.
It doesn't. Yeah. And if control feels like a hard word, then just setting standards as a society,
yes.
You know,
to answer your original question. Yes, that's what we're doing. We're going to be creating protection areas where the public can come in. They're welcome to come in, but there'll be a waiting area. They'll be allowed to go wherever they want to go to in the building, but they have to have an appointment. And it's a shame because I've always had an open door policy. Mm-hmm. People can walk off the street, come upstairs and walk right into my office and say, I need to ask you a question. And I'll say, yeah, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that anymore.
Yeah,
because you don't know who it is that's going to be walking off that street and for what purpose they're doing that. And as an employer, we have an obligation to provide a safe working environment for all of our people. And that's the rub. Yeah. How do we do that without violating the First Amendment and providing protection to all the employees against people such as what we experienced in this situation?
Right. Rudy Marconi, unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I really appreciate you coming on, being so thoughtful, and talking about what is a very difficult situation in Ridgefield right now, and we'll see what happens next. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Appreciate your time.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you? Melissa in the Morning welcomes Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Congressman Himes. Welcome back. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Doing great. Thank you.
So I see Brittany Griner has officially touched back down in the United States. And of course, this is, I think, the big story nationally that everybody is focused on and has been focused on for several months. Thoughts, first of all, on the swap and getting Brittany Griner back? How long was she in Russian prison for?
Well, what was it? It was probably, 9 months or something. I think she was taken at the beginning of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously we're thrilled for her. I mean, you can only imagine the horror of what it's like not speaking Russian, being sentenced 9 years. And I promise you, a Russian prison looks nothing like an American prison. I can only imagine what the conditions were. But I'm thrilled that she's back. But, you know, every time you do one of these things, there's two problems. Number one, you're negotiating with some truly awful people. You know, we don't have this problem with Germany or Japan or the United Kingdom, right? And, of course, in this case, there were one in particular, a former Marine, Paul Whelan, who was not included with the deal. And that's obviously just devastating. And, so again, mixed feelings every time you do one of these. And I'll point out, Melissa, you know, we've got one of these cases right here at home. I've been working for years to try to free a gentleman by the name of Murad Tabaz, who is from Fairfield County, has been held for years now by the Iranians. He was taken when he was doing conservation work in Iran, and he's been rotting in a prison in Tehran for many years. So these situations are just excruciating. But bottom line, I'm really glad that Brittany Grimes is home.
I'm just curious with that, Congressman Himes. First of all, I have to confess, I don't think I'm familiar with the Fairfield County man that you're talking about? What was that situation? I don't think I know that one.
So Murad Tabaz is a guy, he was a business guy, Iranian originally, but an American now. Very successful businessman, and in his retirement, he was doing conservation work. He had an organization that was helping the wildlife, which, as you might imagine, doesn't get a lot of thought in Iran. The Iranians took him, accused him of being an intelligence asset. I sit on the intelligence committee, so I can tell you with great certainty that he is not. And for years now, he's been rotting in Evin prison in the middle of Tehran, and he's elderly and he's not healthy. And it's just a brutal, brutal case, you know, caused by a brutal regime doing terrible things. And so, yeah, for years now, we've been working to free him.
So that's kind of my question. So with Brittany Griner, again, as you mentioned, it was almost a year, no question. And nobody should have to go through that at all. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. I think my question, though, with this is how do you sort of pick and choose? And I'm not saying you, Congressman Himes. I'm saying how does that even get picked or chosen? You know, like when you talk about a U.S. Marine who has been sitting there since 2018 and a WNBA star, you know, how does, you know, does clout have something to do with it is sort of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't give you a lot of insight because I was not, like you said, not, thank God, not my job. But I am awfully glad that there's somebody good in that job. I don't know the details of the negotiation. My sense was that because Whalen was a Marine and a former military guy, the Russians sort of reserved, you know, kind of thought of him as special. But I don't know the inside ins and outs of these negotiations. They are always excruciating, though. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the fact that, I mean, people are saying, well, we traded this guy for an awful arms dealer. True. As it happens, that arms dealer served 10 years in a United States prison. So you feel slightly good about that. But, you know, because the United States is an ethical country and we don't take people as hostages, we're inevitably making trades with, you know, decent people who in many cases committed no crime at all in exchange for some truly awful people. And that's kind of part of the business. But back to your question, I don't know the ins and outs of this. I can tell you one thing, you know, obviously the White House would have much, much preferred that both get out. But, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to Paul Whelan's brother on TV last night, and obviously he was devastated, but he said, you know what? If the choice is to get two, you know, one out or zero out, get the one person out. So incredible grace on the part of that family, which Jeez. I know is probably wow. devastated today.
Yeah, sure. So we're talking to Congressman Himes, and we're talking about the Brittany Griner story. And Brittany Griner has officially touched back down in the United States. And I'm going to get back to her side of the story in just a second. Let's talk about Victor Bout, if you don't mind, for just a few minutes. As you mentioned, a convicted arms dealer. His nickname is the Merchant of Death. Which is not very settling. People are saying, and of course, you're always going to get opinions on everything, in everything in life, which you know, Congressman Himes. But people are saying that Russia really got the one up here. They made the U.S. look very vulnerable. It has now put prisoners in other countries who are U.S. citizens in a very vulnerable position. This has made the U.S. look foolish, are some of the comments I'm hearing this morning. What do you think? And have we put ourselves not only in a bad light, but also do we just release somebody who could be very dangerous because he had proven to be dangerous years ago to the United States and other countries?
Yeah. You know, again, it's awfully easy to second guess these things. And the folks who are saying this is a terrible deal, maybe they need to talk to Brittany Griner's family. You know, pretty easy to Monday morning quarterback when it's not your sister or your spouse or your parent who is involved here. And I can tell you something about that because for years I've been working with, as I told you, Murad Tabaz's family here in Fairfield County. And, you know, that those families wake up in hell every single day. So pretty easy for folks that, you know, don't have family members rotting away in Lefortovo prison or Evin prison in Tehran to play Monday morning quarterback, which isn't to say that they raise valid points. You know, the Israelis have a standing policy that when one of their soldiers is taken or if there's a kidnapping, they will not negotiate with the people who do that for precisely that reason. You do worry that you know, if you start trading, that more prisoners will be taken. Now, the good news is that for all these awful regimes, North Korea, Iran, Russia, you know, you can sort of count on one hand the number of Americans that are being held. So it's not like we've got hundreds being taken for that purpose. But, you know, the Israelis take the tack they do. Now, the decision there is that there are Israelis who have been held by terrorist organizations for decades or years at least, right? So, again, I'm without in any way saying that people are raising invalid issues because they are valid issues. You know, you got to put yourself in the shoes of somebody whose spouse or child is rotting away in a god-awful foreign prison before you say we should never do these things.
And we're back with Congressman Jim Himes this morning. As we have been reporting all morning, Brittany Griner is officially back on U.S. soil after a prisoner swap happened earlier this week. And here's my last question for you, Congressman Himes, because I know you're very busy. But I agree with what you said, that unless you're in the shoes of somebody who's experiencing this, which I honestly can't imagine. If I'm being real, between you and me, I cannot even imagine anybody. I don't care if you're a basketball star, if you're a military personnel, if you are just a regular person working and you're caught in these situations. I remember, where was it? Where the, was it in the Koreas, I think, either North Korea? I can't remember. But where the student had taken down an advertisement, when people
North
go on.
Korea.
Yes,
yeah,
in North Korea. That was a horrible case. That was just a student who had done a dumb thing, essentially, had just done a very dumb thing and destroyed him. I mean, just horrific. So, yes, I agree with you that you shouldn't look at the resume of the person. Nobody should have to live under these conditions. With that being said, in the Brittany Griner situation, though, being sentenced to 9 years in prison, obviously excessive. I would imagine that Russia knew that we were going to kind of try to negotiate a deal with them. But for having vape cartridges with cannabis oil, and I say this as respectfully as I can, dumb. Kind of like the student, unfortunately, who had pulled down the advertisement. Like, to me, I feel like there needs to be a lesson in this. And of course, I'm not saying this woman deserves any more punishment. My God, she's lived almost a year in a Russian prison. So I'm not saying that. But do you believe that there needs to be some oversight or something put into place for especially athletes who go overseas to either play games or to do tournaments or even do like the Olympics? Should there be a better precedent that the U.S. is setting for especially celebrities or athletes so that we're not in a situation again where we have to give up, either people or go to the negotiation table or leave somebody like a Mr. Whalen behind instead for something that could have been avoided? Like, that should not have been in her luggage, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, let me say two things about that, Melissa. Number one, yeah, it's always worth being extra careful when you go abroad for everybody. There are lots of countries with different cultures. You know, if you ever have the opportunity to go to Saudi Arabia, Melissa, you're a woman. If you go to Saudi Arabia, study up a little bit on,
yes,
what you're supposed
but
to
that's
do
what
as
I guess
a woman
I'm getting
in Saudi
at.
Arabia.
Absolutely.
However, let me say this. We're talking about Russia. We're talking about North Korea. I promise you that if, Brittany Griner or some other Brittany Griner, if they wanted them as a hostage, they'll find a reason. They'll find a reason and they'll make one up if they can't find whatever residue on a jewel. So I would say those two things. And let me, I know you need to move on, but you know, I've had a lot of interesting conversations about this, and people do raise valid points because these are evil people that we're negotiating with, and that's always hard. You know, I'm a dad. Here's where I come out. You know, and as we talked about, the Israelis won't negotiate, and there's a logic to that. And we all wish that Paul Whelan were home. Absolutely. Here's my take as a dad. I've got two daughters. If both of my daughters were in Russia or North Korea right now, I would want the White House working 24/7 to free them. And if one got freed, I would be real happy, and I would hope that the very next day the White House and others were working like crazy to get the other one free. You know, if all of a sudden they start taking thousands of Americans to get into the business of negotiating, I might rethink that. But, you know, we got a handful of people there. We should celebrate the ones who come home and just redouble our efforts to get the ones who are still unjustly held back to the United States. That's where I come out on this.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't disagree with you on that front. Congressman Himes, I really appreciate you coming on, talking about this morning, and I know we'll be talking to you in a couple of weeks. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Melissa. Take care.
So I had this in my news a couple of weeks ago, but I know since talking about it, there are some conflicting reports, so I wanted to have a doctor come on to discuss it. The experimental drug, it's called lecanemab, I believe is how you pronounce it. I'll double check that. Shows potential as an Alzheimer's disease treatment, according to new phase 3 trial results. However, there are also some safety concerns in association with it, but this could become one of the first experimental dementia drugs to appear to slow the progression of cognitive decline. So it could be a real game changer. Joining us this morning to talk a little bit more about this is Hartford HealthCare's Dr. Rahul Gupta, president of medical staff at St. Vincent's Medical Center and a geriatric specialist. Good morning, Dr. Gupta. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. First of all, did I say the drug correctly? Is it lecanemab?
That's right. It is lecanemab.
Okay. How long has this drug been worked on? When did they first start working on this? Do you know?
So, lecanemab, it is essentially a monoclonal antibody against amyloid beta. But this is not the first monoclonal antibody that they studied, you know. Similar drugs have been studied in past, going as far back as 10 years ago. There were two drugs that were tried, but that did not work out. And then as recent as last year, actually, another drug in similar class, aducanumab was tried and approved on an accelerated approval. And this is the latest of the same class of drugs, slightly different in approach from the previous ones, but essentially the same class. So this was presented last two weeks ago in November, November 29th in California in the conference, and also published in New England Medical Journal around the same time. The trial that they did, Clarity AD trial for use of this drug in early Alzheimer's and MCI, which is mild cognitive impairment patients. So it is a newer drug, but it's not the first of its type.
Okay. Now, according to the data that was released in the New England Journal of Medicine, it shows that this drug could reduce cognitive and functional decline by 27%. Is that significant in comparison to what past drug attempts? So you were saying this isn't the first time that they've gotten to this level of a drug for Alzheimer's, but, have other drugs seen that much of a percentage? That sounds like that's pretty significant, 27%.
So, we kind of have to look at the details of the numbers that are being, published or that are said. The endpoint or the for this medication as well as the other monoclonal antibodies that they were looking were the decrease in the beta amyloid deposits in the brain, which is done by PET scanning and other tests. But also improvement in the functional level of the person, or slowing down of the decline of the cognition of the person. Now, 0.45 points on a scale, which is CDR scale, sum of boxes, which is the scale they use to predict the decline in this particular drug. It is significant compared to placebo. But is it clinically significant? That is the big question. Mm-hmm. And it is only for the early stages of Alzheimer's and mild cognitive impairment. So while it is encouraging, it is yet to be seen whether it is clinically important.
Okay, so we're talking this morning to Dr. Rahul Gupta, president of medical staff at St. Vincent's Medical Center, but also a geriatric specialist. And we're talking about this new Alzheimer's drug, which is aimed at slowing down progression. It is FDA approval pending. And while there are a lot of good things to it, I did notice in my research, Dr. Gupta, that a phase 2 trial didn't really show any significant difference between this lecanemab and using a placebo for the people who had been testing it. But in the phase 3 trial, which looks like another 6 months of being on the drug, lecanemab was associated with more clearance of I guess, things in the brain, but also less cognitive decline. So what does that tell you? Does it mean that in a longer period, this drug is effective, but in the short term, it just won't work as well? You know, like what do you take away from that finding?
So, you know, we can only go by the data that is published, and that was 18 months trial, right? So at the end of 18 months, there was a slowing of the decline compared to the placebo. As I said before, you know, that slowing is significant statistically, so that is encouraging, but does it really translate into a meaningful clinical change is probably still to be seen. And you do bring up a good point. You know, as you look at the data, the difference kept on increasing between placebo and the drug over a period of 18 months. So maybe when they publish more data about going forward over years, maybe the difference would be more significant, but that has not been published yet or not out yet. So we still have to wait and see on that.
And then here's my other question, because there's always good and bad, right, Dr. Gupta? But it's mm-hmm. it's hard to kind of decipher as a layman person, as myself. I'm not a medical expert by any means. That's why I have people like you on my show. But I've seen that there are some concerns with serious adverse events. What does that even mean when they say that there are some safety concerns with serious adverse events with this drug? What does that mean for the common person who did not go to medical school?
Sure thing. So the way these monoclonal antibodies work, as you mentioned earlier, is by kind of, you know, breaking down or taking away the beta amyloid, you know, protofibrils. And what essentially that means is it is kind of clearing the brain off the plaques that we presume cause Alzheimer's disease or, you know, neurocognitive impairment. Now, when they use these drugs, because it was breaking off the plaques, there was some inflammatory changes seen on the MRIs of these patients. And those inflammatory changes are noted as amyloid-related imaging abnormalities, which could be, you know, just mild inflammation or edema to something more significant as, you know, microhemorrhages and big hemorrhages. The newer concern that kind of, you know, came to light was with two particular, you know, cases which were, you know, which had very bad outcome. In both those cases, it's not, in my opinion at least, it's not clear whether it was just the medication or there were other things that were contributing to it. Mm. You know, essentially blood thinners and blood clot breaking products, which were there in both these patients. And this is not the first time that this has happened. These concerns were already present with this class of drugs, mm-hmm. even going back to the other two and three that I mentioned before. Got so, you know, we would need to just stratify patients who can get them. From what it looks like now, you know, people who are going to be on blood thinners and blood clot busters, it would be a contraindication or, you know, to be used with caution. So those are the confounding factors in it.
Makes sense. Just like any major drug, when you have those risks, you got to check and see if you're an eligible candidate for it. Well, Dr. Gupta, I really appreciate you coming on, breaking this down for us. Again, I know it's still in the early stages, but we will see. This could be a real game changer for Alzheimer's patients. So I thank you so much for your information and for coming on WICC.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Dr. Rahul Gupta, again, president of medical staff at St. Vincent's Medical Center and geriatric specialist right here on Melissa in the Morning.